Hello and welcome back to the MJA podcast. I'm Kate Swanell. Today our topic is metformin, the cheap, accessible and relatively safe first-line treatment for type 2 diabetes that's been around for decades. As new drugs come on the market, questions can be asked about the safe prescribing and dose adjustment of metformin at different stages of renal impairment. A group of Melbourne researchers has conducted a narrative review on this subject. One of the authors, Dr. Cara Tanner, a physician trainee at Austin Health, is my special guest today. Let's have a chat about metformin. It's been the first-line therapy for type 2 diabetes for decades. How does it work and what makes it such a great therapy?
That's a very good question. So I don't think anybody particularly knows how it works. Like, despite it being available for so long, we really don't have a good understanding how it actually works. There are some sort of there is further research evolving on some of the underlying mechanisms and how it affects particular glucose, and the research has been looking into the liver and stuff like that. But overall, we actually don't have a great understanding on actually how it works. We do know there's a couple of mechanisms. The main way that it works, I guess you could say, is it reduces the overall glucose production,
right,
and that's thought to occur in the liver. But the actual mechanisms behind that, we don't know yet. Those studies are still evolving. It does have a minor effect of glucose uptake in the muscles, and we do know that as well. But despite it being available for over 50 years, our actual knowledge of how it works is still quite a mystery, unfortunately.
So why has its use been restricted for patients with chronic kidney disease?
With metformin, it's a class of drugs that's been around for quite a while. It's the most familiar one of the drugs that are available, and most of the predecessors of metformin, of that drug class, have actually been withdrawn from the market, so they're not readily available. And when I'm talking about those drug classes, I'm talking about a drug that people have probably never prescribed or seen before. And that's because it was withdrawn back into the 70s due to lots of problems with lactic acidosis. So I'm actually referring to fenformin. And that was withdrawn, I don't know the specifics in Australia, but I do know back in the US it was withdrawn in 1977 because of such high incidences of lactic acidosis and there was lots of mortality. So some of the case reports back then reported up to 64 cases per 100,000 person years of use for this particular drug. And as a result of that, it got withdrawn because of the complications. But that particular drug is slightly different to metformin. It is more lipophilic. It has more affinity to mitochondrial membranes. And it has a greater tendency to impair sort of oxidative phosphorylation in the liver, and that's where we think metformin primarily works. But fenformin has this greater affinity, and so it has a greater tendency to cause lactic acidosis. And that was subsequently withdrawn back in the 70s. And so most of the caution around metformin is really related to this drug class and its association with these other predisposing drugs. And particularly because of the pharmacokinetics of metformin. So metformin, unlike a lot of other drugs, doesn't undergo metabolism in the liver. It's essentially primarily excreted through the kidneys. And we do know that based on pharmacokinetic data, there's an inverse relationship between renal function and metformin plasma concentration. So essentially, as renal function goes down, plasma metformin concentrations go up.
Yeah, and that creates lactic acidosis, yes?
Yes, they postulate that's the reasoning behind accumulation of metformin leading to lactic acidosis.
So what does the latest evidence say?
The latest evidence is a little bit interesting and controversial. So whether metformin leads to lactic acidosis has always been an ongoing debate, particularly in the last 10, 20 years. A lot of the case reports and stuff around about metformin leading to lactic acidosis are quite old. They're quite poorly done. And when we retrospectively go back and have a look at these case reports, often we can identify other important factors that may have caused the lactic acidosis rather than metformin. And I guess that's the thing, that metformin can't cause severe lactic acidosis, because in large overdoses, we do know that it definitely, most definitely does. But the newest evidence, and there's been a couple of recently published studies in the last year or so, that has really looked at not only metformin at like the higher renal function, when I say higher, so eGFRs of 60 to 90, so estimated glomerular filtration rates, a higher range, but they've also looked at people with sort of advanced kidney disease as well as stage 4 kidney disease, and whether metformin is associated with lactic acidosis. And the most recent study was done last year. This is probably the most impressive study that has come out, which really looked at not only metformin dosing, but it looked at different renal functions and changes over time. And mm-hmm. most of the studies have not been able to do this, especially with large numbers as well. And the latest studies show that down to an estimated glomerular filtration rate of about 30, metformin is not associated with lactic acidosis at all. Below that renal function, there is an increased risk of lactic acidosis. But the amount of data that we have in that sort of population in the sort of more advanced renal disease is quite limited. So we don't have any safety profiles or safety data or research saying it's definitely safe in those more advanced renal functions. If we're looking at the current guidelines available in Australia and overseas, most of them recommend discontinuing once renal function goes below this level. And I think that's probably in keeping with the most recent research. There was a Taiwanese study that was published in The Lancet, done, I believe, in the last couple of years. And that specifically looked at metformin use in the Taiwanese population, because at that time, there was no regulation on dosing and they didn't restrict prescriptions in the more advanced kidney disease. So they were able to have a look at the risk factors in this population, because typically we've never been able to look at this sort of data, because generally it has been discontinued when people develop more advanced renal disease. And that did show that metformin use in end-stage renal disease is associated with increased mortality. The only thing to note with this particular study is the patients in it had very advanced renal disease, and a lot of the doses weren't adjusted for renal function either, which we typically in Australia do adjust. So that needs to be obviously taken into consideration. But in that particular study, with higher dose levels of metformin, so we're talking around about a gram a day, 1,000 milligrams a day, with very advanced kidney disease, it was associated with around about a 35% higher risk of all-cause mortality in patients with type 2 diabetes. The other interesting thing that's come out of some of these new studies also is, so the one by Lazarus not only looked at renal function, but they compared people with other therapies such as sulfonylureas, and as well as looking at patients with insulin therapy. And what they found was, irrespective of whether somebody was on metformin or not on metformin, the rates of lactic acidosis naturally increases with worsening renal function. So it's hard to establish that causal relationship. Is it related to the metformin, or is it in itself to do with the patient's range of renal function?
I'm chatting today with Cara Tanner, a physician trainee at Austin Health in Melbourne, about metformin's safety profile in renal disease. Her co-authored narrative review is available at mja.com.au, as are our other podcasts. Back to our chat. What's the message here for primary care physicians, Cara? I mean, if they have a patient who's, you know, on metformin and is showing signs of some kidney degeneration, what do GPs need to keep an eye out for?
With medications like metformin, where it's always a risk versus benefit analysis, and there are some small randomized controlled trials, and there are some small observational studies that have shown that there are some cardiovascular benefits in continuing metformin in people with chronic kidney disease, and in these patients, they're particularly at high risk. So when looking at this sort of population, it's always good to look at risk versus benefit analysis. And I think in these patients, as long as there's very close monitoring and sensible prescribing, it could be something that can be continued in people who do have reasonably stable chronic kidney disease. Generally, obviously, practice varies based on different institutions, but generally it's recommended that if people have rapidly declining renal function or present with an acute illness in hospital, whether it's a heart attack or an infection in which often patients present with an acute kidney injury. In these sort of instances, for safety reasons, we generally recommend that metformin be discontinued, because the overall benefits are from long-term use, and in that short term, there's no benefit and there's more risk in continuing those medications until patients stabilise. But in the average community patient, where often patients with type 2 diabetes do have some degree of renal impairment, as long as it's kept and monitored for a period of time, and the Australian guidelines and the UK guidelines actually provide some pretty good advice about renal monitoring, particularly after initiating therapy. So the guidelines vary depending on which one you look at, but generally within the sort of first 4 to 6 months after initiating metformin therapy, it's always good to keep an eye on their renal function, and then generally monitoring it at least once a year. And then if people sort of get into the lower renal function categories, say with an eGFR of 30 to 60, some guidelines recommend doing twice yearly renal function just to keep an eye on that. If you are obviously suspicious that somebody may have symptoms of lactic acidosis or may have lactic acidosis, it's always good to obviously test that. But in the acute setting, generally it's recommended just to discontinue it until patients stabilise. There's no studies looking at, you know, necessarily that it has to be done that, but I think with risk-benefit analysis, it's probably the most sensible thing to do in these acute circumstances. And overall, metformin is generally pretty well tolerated. Gastrointestinal side effects are the most concerning feature that limits often patients' use. And in fact, a lot of the Cochrane reviews of the studies that look at metformin associated with lactic acidosis, it's actually a fairly rare event. But if you're sensible in prescribing in these acute circumstances, I think that minimises the risk. And in these acute illnesses, often people can have a lactic acidosis, and it's often multifactorial.
Yeah.
So rather than making the picture even more difficult to interpret, it's easier just to temporarily suspend or withhold these medications until people are clinically more stable. I guess the reason that we decided to look into it was to ask the question, you know, what evidence is there to support it being continued? Mm-hmm. What evidence is there to withdraw it? And what are the potential benefits? And we briefly touch on it, and we weren't able to go into too much detail, but a lot of the evidence behind a lot of the guidelines up until recently have, a lot of the guidelines have not been evidence-based, and really the evidence behind a lot of this has been quite scant and convoluted and gives sort of mixed messages. And a lot of that, unfortunately, is derived by the fact that we don't have a great understanding of the medication. There are newer studies that look at sort of potential mitochondrial mechanisms, but we're not 100% sure how it works as of yet. And the other thing that we don't know really is what's considered a therapeutic dose and what's considered a toxic dose. Yeah. We don't know what the therapeutic range is. And we really don't know whether all this, we dose adjust according to renal function as part of a safety risk benefit analysis, I think, because we're concerned about the lactic acidosis, but there's actually really no studies that look at, you know, if somebody has a renal function, an eGFR of 30, and we continue them at the maximum dose, what's their risk of developing lactic acidosis and complications? We really don't know that, because that information doesn't really exist. It doesn't get collected. It's not available. And because there's not a lot of money behind metformin, because it's a readily available drug, a lot of the companies won't invest in the studies to have a look at this. But one of the things that we touch on is maybe that there may be some cardiovascular benefits in continuing these in with people with chronic kidney disease. And I just want to highlight, the studies aren't massive. They aren't great. They're not robust as some of the sodium glucose cotransporter 2 studies, which show quite good cardiovascular benefits with those particular drugs in patients with type 2 diabetes. We're not saying that, you know, metformin is better than any of those drugs, but I guess what we're trying to say is perhaps if there's not a lot of risk, and if people have fairly stable chronic kidney disease, there may be benefits in continuing these medications with appropriate monitoring up until people have that renal, well, up until they have their renal function about 30, and then at that point, it's probably important to reconsider ceasing it. Thanks, Kate.
Thank you. My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.